Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
We want to talk Major League Baseball. We want to talk what it's like to grow up in the state of Oregon. There's only one guy we can talk to on this. Harold Reynolds, MLB Network, Fox Sports, former big-time Major League Baseball player, son of Oregon, fan of all things in the state of Oregon. Am I getting that all right? Harold Reynolds, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you.
Hey, what's up, Big John? Yeah, you got all that right, man. I'm proud to be an Oregonian. That's great.
What do you hear when you bring that up to people across the country when you're a fan of Oregon, you root for all things in the state, do you get grief for that or do they understand?
Yeah, well, it depends. It's a mixed review. A lot of people first they look at me like, Oregon, do you hunt and fish and what's going on out there? And I always tell them, I always laugh at them. They're like, I go, look, there's brothers in Oregon. Come on now. So they laugh and joke about that. But all in all, everybody's first thing comes to mind after that is Nike. Everybody wants to know about Nike and how that all came about. But, the state really in the last, it's changed so much in the last 20 years with the perception of Oregon. It's just on the map, as a state. And the colleges is doing well and everything else. So, it's changed. You got so many great things happening in the state now.
Harold, the conversation around baseball returning, we're talking about the NBA, the NFL season, college. Where are you at with that? How hopeful are you that we're going to have a baseball season?
Well, I've been saying the whole time, a lot of people were talking about July, and I've always felt like we were going to play in July. I kind of liked the plan early on when they were saying it was going to be Florida and Arizona, and now you see the NBA is talking about maybe just going to one destination in Orlando. So maybe baseball wasn't as crazy as a lot of people thought. But I still think, July, I'm still hearing that. I know they're in negotiations right now, and the players' union will counter what the owners put on the table the other day. But that's the least of my worries. They will get a deal done. It's just if everybody's safe and healthy, they can protect guys that way, then there'll be a season, and that's really it.
What would a spring training look like, or what is that period where the second spring training look like? How much time do the hitters and pitchers need?
Well, I thought it was going to be closer to 3 or 4 weeks, but now I think it's just going to be a little over 2 weeks, and we'll be playing games at this point in time. The rosters are going to be expanded. You're going to look at 30-man rosters, probably carry the whole 40-man just to make sure guys are healthy. So we're not going to have pitchers throwing 9 innings. They're usually the ones that need a longer extended spring training. But hitters, you can get your timing in a couple weeks, I would think. Most guys are already hitting. You just need to face some pitching, and then you get ready to play some games. So I think spring training will be shortened up. I thought at first it'd be probably 3, maybe 4 weeks. Now I think as the calendar's turning and clock's against us, I think we'll get closer to 2 weeks.
I've been thinking about all these weird things that could happen with like an 82 game schedule. Could someone hit 400 on an 82 game schedule?
If they play that type of game, they could. I just don't think the hitters are as interested in hitting 400 as maybe it was, back in the 90s when Carew and Gwynn and everybody were chasing Boggs or chasing 400s. Brett, I don't want to leave George out. But I don't think that's the mindset of the players anymore. I think it's more they want to hit home runs. And I think we will see a little bit different style of game, though. If you notice, when it gets to the postseason, It's about getting runners over. It's about being efficient. That's what we're going to see, a sprint to the end. I was talking to Todd Frazier last night, and he's like, man, I want to play so bad when every game matters. Yeah. You know, and he said, you go into a seven-game losing streak, you're done. And so this is going to be really cool. I think the games will be way more competitive, and they'll be more compelling. It'll be more interesting, I think.
Harold Reynolds with us. Harold, the stolen base is, you know, not what it, like, I remember Ricky when he was stealing over 100 bases a year. Why did the stolen base disappear? What's the logic there?
Well, they started playing the game thinking, you know, you get 27 outs in a 9-inning game, and I don't want to give up any outs. And what they lost is that if a guy on first had some speed, the guy at the plate's probably going to get a fastball to hit because you don't want to have him running on a breaking pitch. Yep. And all that strategy has changed. And so we have gone so far away from hit and runs, stealing bases, bunting, moving runners, to really it's about power. Power pitching. Does he throw 95? How far can he hit a ball? How fast did it come off his bat? That's where we've been. I would love to see the game change back because we're so base-to-base. We're really missing the essence of the greatness. I mean, look at Mike Trout, for example. All right, Mike Trout, his first full season, stole 49 bases. And now he doesn't even run, you know. And this is the best player in the game. We're diminishing all his five tools and just getting down to, wow, did you see the home run Trout hit last night? There's so many other things he can do. And hopefully we can get the game back to where it should be played.
He stole 60 bases in 1987.
Yeah, that's one of my famous stories. I know you've heard this one, John.
Tell me.
I mean, everybody's kind of heard it. So it came down to the last day of the season. And in the 80s there, Ricky Henderson, like you talked about earlier, he every year was stealing 100, 120 bases. Well, I was the only guy in the 80s to win a stolen base title other than Ricky. And so it came down the last day of the season. Willie Wilson had 59. I had 59. Ricky had got injured that year. I think in May he already had 30. So he's on his way to another 100 stolen base season. I steal a base on the last day of the year. The Mariners, we do not make the playoffs. I fly home. And next day my phone rings and Ricky talks always in the third person to you.
Uh-huh.
So... I'm serious. He'd be leading off second base. John sometimes would be like, Ricky getting ready to go. You can't stop Rick. Ricky gone right here. Ricky going. And so I get home, the phone rings. I answer the phone. Hello. He says, Henderson here. I said, hey, what up, Rick? How you doing, man? So he's calling to congratulate me, right?
Yeah.
He says, 60 stolen bases? You ought to be ashamed. Ricky has 60 at the All-Star break. Click. And he hung up the phone. So in my office here at MLB Network, I have a poster of him that he signed. He just signed it, you know, stole the base champ, Ricky Henderson. I love it.
I love that story. That's great.
Did you, like, when you have a year like that, you know, you're getting chances to run, you know, and you talked about how it affects teammates. Who else benefits from the fact that Harold Reynolds is stealing 60 bases?
Well, as far as our whole team, now all of a sudden everybody starts running. You know, because you don't want just have one guy running, but the whole team is running. And it became an aggressive mindset of we're on first base, a ball hitting the gap. You know, it made you want to walk. Okay, I walk, I'm going to steal a bag. Now I walk, I'm standing on first. What's that? So I may as well swing. You know, it just changes the whole mindset, I think, of how you play and participate in the game of baseball. It's fun, and it's exciting for fans.
You talked about every game mattering, and that got my juices going. Like, I want to see that season. That, and I think baseball has a chance maybe to learn something in this season. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, I totally agree. I'm not even opposed to a 20-second clock. You know, get the ball back. Let's go, man. Let's get some action moving. You know, those type of things. I think we'll expand the playoffs if we get to that point this year. We may have 14 teams in the playoffs. See how that works. And my most exciting thing, what I'm most excited about, I should say, is there will be a Destination World Series. You know, they're going to announce it. It's going to be played in Miami or it's going to be San Diego or whatever. But there has to be a Destination World Series this year. And if you're going to play a World Series maybe in November or December and you've had a short season, you can't miss. So you got to have a destination. So how cool will that be to sit there and, you know, the season kicks off and all of a sudden you're like, hey, man, I'm going to Miami for the World Series. I'm going to be there. You going? Yeah, I'm planning on going down there. You know what I mean? Like yep. You do with the Super Bowl or the college football championships or whatever. I think it creates a whole nother buzz. But that's for another day. But I think you can do a lot of things right now to really spice up the game and fan interest.
Two-time All-Star Harold Reynolds with us. That first All-Star game, 1987, you walk into the clubhouse, you look around, and, you know, there's Ricky, there's Wade Boggs and Dave Winfield and Willie Randolph. And what was that like for you?
It was amazing because a lot of those guys, you know, you see on TV all the time. Mike Smith was still playing. Pete Rose was around. You know, they brought Pete back for some reason that year in 87. I mean, it was like cool as can be to do that. But I got an amazing side story. I'll just share. I don't know how much time we have, but I'll do it real quick. I've been talking to a lot of colleges, Oregon State, both their programs, Princeton, you name it. I've had colleges call me for these Zoom calls to talk to their teams during the week. You read about it a lot with football, but actually they're doing it in baseball as well. And one of the things I keep telling these guys is you get one look, man, first impressions for people to make on you. And the only reason I thought of this is you brought up my first All-Star game. So my first All-Star game is in 1987, and Bobby Doerr is the honorary captain, the former Red Sox, Oregonian. He grew up in Junction City. And so Bobby Doerr is the honorary American League captain. And I'm like, this is going to be so cool. So I hang out with Bobby for a couple of days, and then they go, you're from Oregon, Bobby's from Oregon, you play for the Mariners. We're going to have a press conference for you, too. So now it's the national media. It's me and Bobby Doerr. I'm like, this is the coolest moment of my life. So I'm sitting there with Bobby, and he's got his arm around me. I love this kid. What a kid. And I'm thinking, wow, Bobby Doerr. And then somebody in the back says, hey, Harold, Bobby, did you ever see Harold play before he got to the major leagues? And he says, well, yes, I saw him play in high school. And I'm like, wow. You did? I don't know. You don't know who I watch as you play. You just kind of do your thing, right? Yeah. So he goes, I saw him as a sophomore because when I was with the Toronto Blue Jay organization, I was the national curve checker, and I decided on who the Blue Jays were going to draft. So his sophomore season, we drafted a kid out of North Eugene named Danny Ainge. Uh-huh. And he goes, I'm following Danny for 2 weeks, and they're in the playoffs, and he plays against Corvallis, and this kid – Harold here hits a base hit to right field and ends Danny's high school career. I put him away with a walk-off hit. I'll never forget it. I don't know Bobby Doerr's there. Coolest thing ever. Right. Well, he takes Danny Ainge in the first round. So as most people, Oregon will know, Danny goes on and plays with the Celtics. He's president of Celtics now, but he got to the big leagues with the Blue Jays at age 21. Then he decided he's going to play basketball at BYU and pick the NBA. Long story short, Bobby comes back 2 years later because now he's the cross checker again. There's a chance some kid from Corvallis named Harold Reynolds might go in the first round. So he's like, I got 3 kids to go see, and I'm going to plan to stop in Oregon last so I can hunt and fish. I'm like, all right. So he goes, and I'm sitting here in the press conference at the All-Star game, and I'm beaming, right? I'm like, wow, this is cool. Bobby Doerr. And so now it's my senior year in high school. And he goes, I saw him play his senior year. I only saw him in one game. I'm thinking, shoot, I hit 590 my senior year in high school. So I know he saw me get some knocks, you know. And he goes, I went to Houston first to see a guy named Jesse Barfield. Well, they draft Jesse Barfield. He plays about 20 years in the big leagues. We used to call him the body because he was ripped up. He goes, then I go to Sacramento, and I see a kid named Lloyd Mosby. Well, Mosby ends up being the center fielder. They call him the shaker because he used to shake all the time. He played 15 years. He goes, then I go to Oregon, and Harold's playing a game up in Salem at McNary High School. And I'm like, okay, yeah, McNary, yeah. And I'm sitting there, yeah, yeah. And he goes, he got kicked out of the game, and I wrote down bad attitudes. We didn't take him. I'm like, what? What? Yeah. Well, I've been playing varsity for 4 years. So I hit a ground ball. I think I beat it out. No big deal. I turned to Bob, the umpire. Bob, I beat that. No, he didn't hear him. Okay, no big. I'm going to get 3 hits. You know, no big deal.
Yeah.
So I throw my helmet to my coach for the third out, and I'm waiting for him to bring my glove, and I go to shortstop. I hear this, you're out of here. I'm like, what? Turn around, and he kicks me out of the game. He goes, hey, the best player in the league, we have a new equipment rule. We're saying you can't throw equipment. I go, I'm throwing it to my coach.
Oh.
I'm not mad. He kicks me out of the game. So Bobby Doerr doesn't know all that. Nobody knows all that. You get that one time first impression. You realize little league, high school, college, minor leagues, 12 years of big leagues. I got kicked out of one game my entire life. One game. And I went from possibly the first round to the sixth round that year in the draft. Because of that one time, there must have been 30-some scouts that walked off and were gone. And Bobby Doerr, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. His yep. word was gospel. So we're sitting there, and he goes, buddy, he's a great kid. I love this guy. Well, shoot, you should have loved me like 7 years ago in high school, you know. But I tell that story all the time to these kids, you know, because they're asking questions. How do you get noticed? How do you get recognized? What can I do? And I'm like, your attitude will determine your altitude. People are popping through, and we do it all the time because it's human nature, but your body language tells us if we like you or not. And I don't like that guy, man. Look at how he acts. Oh, I love this kid. Look at how spry he is. Yep. It's natural. And I try to tell these kids, man, it's how you carry yourself. Don't be slamming the helmet. Don't be, you know, yelling and screaming at your teammates because that's coming back on you. So that's my story.
It's so valuable. I think everybody can take that, you know. There's something for everyone in that. Harold, I hope we have baseball. I'm looking forward to it. I think we are. July 4th, is that what we're talking about here?
Well, we're still hoping. We're still hoping for it. We'll see how this continues to progress, but that is one of the targets. It's July, no doubt about it.
All right. Appreciate you making time. Hey, by the way, you're looking forward to the college football season?
We got to get it going, absolutely. You know, the biggest thing I'm worried about is that Ohio State game. Yeah. I mean, that's got to get played, right? You know, the crazy thing is our conversations have moved from college football to not who's ranked one and who's going to beat who and what does so-and-so have to beat this team. It's are we going to be safe enough to have it?
Yep.
And that's a scary place to be. So hopefully we can get this all worked out because we all love college football. It's the best.
All right, I got a question for you. All right, let's say they play the game. It's at Autzen Stadium, and you've got two tickets to the game, and they're spacing people out. Do you go to the game and wear a mask? Do you feel confident, or you have questions?
No, I wear a mask. I got no problem with that. And if I'm spaced out and they let me in, I'd feel good. I just feel like I've been around enough on the other side of ownership or that side that I know the risk is too high for somebody to gamble not feeling comfortable that everybody's going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my advice, I talked to some major leaguers the other day. I'm like, look, the NBA is doing it right. Dwayne Wade came out and said, we'd love to play. Or Chris Paul, we'd love to play. I think it's great, but we got to make sure we're safe. And now everybody looks at them like, hey, they got it. Baseball did it wrong. Come out arguing, I want my money. Time. There's 38 million people without a job right now. So nobody's going to send anybody out there and have somebody get sick or even worse and lose your whole franchise over it. So I think the health is first, and then everything else will take care of itself. So if they're saying I got two tickets to Oregon, Ohio State, and they're playing that game, yeah, I'll feel confident enough that it's okay to go. I'll have my mask on. I'll keep my distance, but I'm dang sure going to be cheering because it's going to be awesome. You know, it's going to be great.
I will see you there. Harold Reynolds, September 12th, Autzen Stadium.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for the call, John. It's great.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you.
Love the stories. Thank you. Harold Reynolds, good stuff. If you missed any of that, grab the podcast, share it with your friends. I love the stories. Leave it here. You got the BFT. If you miss Harold Reynolds, grab the podcast. Alabama Adriana will have that, as she does every day on the show. Packaged up all tidy and neat. Very entertaining. Coming up, Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times will join us. Bottom of the hour to talk about the Mariners. He is the beat reporter who covers the Mariners. We'll dive deeper on them, along with some other things that he's been covering. In the meantime, Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Bob Costas on the Jim Rome Show talking about how he's handling and coping a world without live sports. Punch it.
I think the fact that I have been around it for decades, Romy, makes it easier for me to deal with it, if that's the right way to put it. Do I hope for sports to be able to return safely and sensibly soon? Of course I do. But I'm not out on a ledge with nothing else to do. Actually, if you look at it the right way, this is an opportunity to do some things you otherwise might not have done. All those books on the shelf that you've been meaning to read, well, I've gotten to a lot of them. The old movies that you never saw or the ones you'd like to see again, this is the opportunity to do it.
Look, I think Bob Costas is kind of underscoring a theme across the country. I've heard a lot of people talk about the silver linings of what we're going through. It's forced some people to slow down. It's enabled some people to see more of their families. The travel has been eliminated from a lot of people's lives. And I think businesses, by and large, are evaluating sort of what they're going to do in the future. I've heard and read and talked with business owners who are saying, you know, I don't know if we necessarily need to have employees in person. I've talked to others who say, you know what, you know, we do need to see employees, but not on a daily basis. We'll have them just come into the office once in a while. So I think everybody's sort of reevaluating their lives. I also think Costas hits on something else. Look, none of us is sitting around saying, without sports, we've got nothing. I hope not, because if that's your stance, that you're just going crazy because there's no sports, I would caution you or maybe encourage you to kind of evaluate maybe other things that are going on in your life. Meanwhile, in the NHL, Commissioner Gary Bettman talked about the possibility of fans being inside those hockey arenas. Punch it.
You know, that's something we're not going to have any control over. Everything we're doing is going to be subject to the guidance and requirements of what the medical people tell us and what the governmental leaders are telling us at all levels, whether it's federal, state, or local. And if they tell us we can have fans, then obviously nothing would make us happier. But I think everybody should assume that as we play this out over the summer and into the fall, it's probably most unlikely that there'll be fans in the buildings, not because we wouldn't want them, but it's a safety, it's a health issue, and we're listening to the experts.
Look, and it isn't about the revenue generated from ticket sales anymore. A caller in hour number one asked me, you know, how do they make money? What is this about if it ultimately comes down to them not being, does it pencil out if they can't have fans in the arena? You know, Blazers President Chris McGowan told me a couple of weeks ago that it doesn't pencil out for them to hold the games in their home arena unless they have ticket sales. I'm now told that this is all about preserving as much of the television revenue as possible. All of the leagues are after this. The NHL's after it. And that's what they're chasing with the neutral site made for TV games. It's about protecting TV revenue. And it allows the leagues to put the 2019-2020 seasons behind them and then turn their attention to the next season. The NHL's going right to the playoffs. 24 teams straight into the playoffs. Tony Dungy. Eye in the sky judging from referees. Tony Dungy takes issue with it. Punch it.
No, I'm not surprised. And my only, I guess, problem with that would be how do I know that a play in the first quarter isn't monumental?
Yeah.
I would have wanted you to step in the first quarter if there was a huge mistake that might impacted my career and my team's chance to win a Super Bowl. So that to me is the whole problem with this sky judge thing. Who says what play is going to be critical? How do we know, looking back, what the big play was? Are we going to get involved with everything and every little detail on every play? I never have been a big fan of replay, and I think this is just one of those reasons why.
Look, I think you've got to figure out a way to simplify things. I support the sky judge idea because if you can have an advisor who's got a chance to get in the ear of the official and save an egregious mistake, I'm all for that because sometimes you can see things from the press box that you can't see on the field. There's so much going on. So I support that. But I also think that Tony Dungy's got it right in that at some point you jump the shark. At some point you've done too much. At some point, you're involved with replay and extra officials, and suddenly it's not about the football game anymore. I think they've got to look over at some of the mistakes that other sports have made and ask themselves, like, hey, in today's world, fans want games that are fast-moving. They don't want the officials to determine the outcome of the game. They like the outcome to be settled on the field. And does this help that come to fruition? And that should be yes, it does. Good, we adopt it. No, it doesn't. No, we shoot it down. That is the end-all and be-all when it comes to those things. Finally, Phil Mickelson talking about his favorite moment of the match.
Oh, gosh. I think when Brady made the two, when he made the putt on 11, because that gave us a chance. And Peyton Manning had hit an iron shot in there to like 8 feet. And with Tiger putting, he's going to make that putt. And so this was our chance to pick one up. Had we not made that after playing this hole like beautifully and then walk away with a tie, that would have been very deflating. Instead, it gave us this energy that, hey, we can do this. We can make this comeback, and we almost did. And that putt that he made on 11 was my favorite moment, I think.
Not for me, Phil. Not for me. You know what my moments were? Tom Brady, erratic, lost balls, and then a miraculous birdie on the seventh hole from 100 yards away. I mean, it gave us all a chance to see somebody that we think is invincible as, like, oh, man, he's as bad as I am at times on the golf course. That's what I think made.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.